Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, our second pod of Argentina Week on Tuesday. Johnny Murphy and Mick Kearney joined me to look back at what went wrong in last week's defeat to New Zealand for Ireland. Today, Bernard Jackman is on the line as we start to put the magnifying glass over Argentina. Birch, how are things today?
Yeah, really good. Looking forward to tomorrow night seeing see what reaction Andy Farrell gets from this Irish team. He very rarely has to ask for a reaction, but I think everybody agrees the All Blacks' performance was way below par in terms of accuracy and intensity. So, and I think Argentina will sense a big opportunity. They're a good side now, so this is a proper test. If we get a win tomorrow night, we'll have had to play well to get it, I think.
Yeah, and you say obviously like Andy Farrell has rarely had to ask for a big response from his team. On the very few times he has had to do it, he generally has got it. You look back to the first test against New Zealand in 2022, Ireland come back and win the series. You look at the summer just gone in South Africa, where Ireland came back and won the second test, and even coming in off the back of the World Cup, where everyone was probably expecting the World Cup hangover to arrive and Ireland go out and do something special out in Marseille. So the history does show that he does, you know, under Andy Farrell, Ireland are very rarely poor 2 weeks on the trot, but that's going to be something we'll be looking out for tomorrow.
No, 100%. Look at obviously 19 games unbeaten at home shows the level of consistency. And I think he can handle a defeat. I think he's okay with there. I remember, you know, the England-Ireland game. He just put his hands up and said, look, we didn't deserve to win it. But it was such a drop-off in performance level. And I think you've seen a reaction to that in his squad selection. You know, for tomorrow night, there has been a reaction. He's still shown, you know, loyalty to certain players. But he has, you know, moved things around a little bit, given people opportunities. And that's what's needed. You have to take your opportunities at test level. And unfortunately, some poor performances, even off the bench, has cost some players dearly.
Yeah, let's get into that team news then, because that obviously is the big news of the last 24 hours. Farrell named his team yesterday. Just one change to the starting 15. That's Robbie Henshaw in at inside centre and Bundiaki out of the matchday squad. But he has changed up the bench quite a bit. Four changes to the bench in total. Debuts for Thomas Clarkson at tight head. He comes in for the injured Tom O'Toole. Sam Prendergast is into the number 22 shirt in place of Kieran Frawley. Ryan Baird comes in for Ian Henderson to provide some second row cover, and Craig Casey then gets the nod above Conor Murray. We might go through these bit by bit, I suppose, Bernard. First of all, in the starting team, Robbie Henshaw comes in. Farrell did say, he did make a point of saying this yesterday when he was asked about Jack Crowley specifically and just how he'd reacted this week, but he did make the point that there are quite a few players in the starting 15 this week who are lucky to keep their places, Jack being one of those as well. Were you surprised he didn't make more changes, or do you think, considering how poor the performance was last week, that this is his opportunity to put pressure on the people who did get selected again to go out and prove it?
Yeah, look, I think when the squad was picked, I don't think there was much debate about it being our best starting team for New Zealand. There was question marks or a little bit of, oh, that bench doesn't look like a bench that's set up to give impact. It's a bench to close it out. So what we've seen is the drastic changes in that. And to be fair to Farrell, as bad as we were, the game was still there to be won, you know, with 20 minutes to go. It really was. I mean, the All Blacks had only scored one try. You know, it was still there to be won. Home crowd, get them into the game, get some impact off the bench. So I think he was really disappointed with that. And, you know, those players were the best players. Jack Crowley maybe hasn't been the best form for Munster, but he's done an incredible job stepping into Johnny Sexton's shoes since the World Cup. So I wouldn't be writing him off. And there's all kinds of rumours that he was being written off and Frawley was coming on to basically take over. And now he's dropped out. And I think if Farrell did feel that Frawley was the man that he was going to build a team around, well, then he shouldn't drop him for this game. So I think that was probably nonsense, to be fair. I think Farrell has gone into this November with Crowley being number one, Frawley being a brilliant guy to come off the bench to play 10 or play elsewhere, and Prendergast the apprentice. And obviously, Frawley's been dropped for what was, you know, a very poor and unusually poor performance for him to give Prendergast experience. But I still think you'll see Frawley play in this in the series again. I certainly, we can't afford to write him off. We can't afford to write him off. But it is great to see Prendergast get a chance to play against Argentina, because I think we all probably felt it was probably going to be Fiji was the game he got a game, and so he may now get three match day selections and get some game time, which is really positive, because he's a player that has a huge amount of potential we're all very excited about, but hasn't had a huge amount of game time at the highest level. So that's a real positive. The other one, Ryan Baird, for Henderson, athletic, younger profile. Henderson gave away a very soft penalty, and Baird is someone that we've been excited about for the last couple of years. 25 years of age, has loads of experience now, without ever really being nailed down first choice for Leinster or Ireland on a consistent basis, but has been a very good member of both squads. And then Casey, again, 25. So these guys aren't spring chickens. I mean, they've served their time both with Ireland and the provinces. But Casey has been the first choice for Munster, has been in form, I thought, and probably would have been unlucky to lose out last week, you know. So he's rectified that. The Clarkson change is obviously enforced through injury, and it's led to, I suppose, you know, Farrell being very open and honest about the lack of choice they have in certain positions, and obviously prop is the most obvious one. So yeah, just a little bit of tension this week from Andy. Actually, there was a little tension last week as well, and probably the first time he's been open and kind of shared the doubts they have around the production line in certain positions, you know, and the player pathway, which we get carried away with ourselves. Like, I genuinely think Farrell and his coaching staff have absolutely maximized the talent that's in the provinces to get us to the level where we were, you know, number one in the world and went to World Cup with strong chances. But below that, unfortunately, there's lots of good players, absolutely good players. But are they the ones who can make a difference and help you win a test match? Well, not what we're seeing for the provinces. And hence we've got a very experienced squad, and that's great because they know how to win test matches. But realistically, is it because they are all at the peak of their power, or is it because there hasn't the same depth below that? And I think with the likes of Pete and Connor and Keane, in particular, it's probably no one has come through really, really strongly to force them out. But that's testament to them. They've lasted the test of time. But that's probably more of a case than they have kept their form as consistent as it was when they were the best in the world.
Yeah, on that then, might keep going on that, and I'll come back to a couple of the stuff from this week's team a little bit later on. But as you said, it feels like there's been a bit of tension in the last week or so, where Farrell has made a couple of references to the size of the playing pool in Ireland and how players aren't kind of banging down the walls to come in. So where it kind of came from last week and yesterday, Andy Farrell used the phrase that at the same time we haven't got thousands of players to choose from. Obviously, pointing, you know, talking about the size of the playing pool, specifically, I would say in South Africa, England, and France, where there's just so much available talent and teams to be able to pick from. And he was asked to kind of follow up on that point yesterday about, you know, what is the solution, obviously, to not having thousands of players or not having as big a playing pool. And I'll just read out his answer. He says part of his answer was, "Your strength is probably your weakness." And I think that's probably the case with Irish rugby. We have a small group of players, but it is a bit of a strength as well. That's why we have to try find a way of keep finding ways of giving them an opportunity to be tested, hence the emerging tour, stuff like that in between. And then this is an interesting point he raised, obviously. One of the things now that stops a bit of continuity, back in the day when the league carried on playing as we went to going through the combinations like the Six Nations, and you got to see 22 or 23-year-olds getting fantastic game time, and the conveyor belt kept on coming because of that. We've got to find a way, because that doesn't happen anymore in the competition. So we've got to keep finding a way to get these players coming through. So obviously what he's pointing out there, for example, is these days during the autumn internationals break and the Six Nations, there isn't an overlap of URC games on the same weekend. Now, I know that there will be one at the end of this month, but that was just because the RFU added an extra game. But if you look at it now, for example, the URC, obviously, Birch, is now an 18-game regular season. The old Pro 14 was a 21-game regular season, plus playoffs in each. Champions Cup is also a week shorter. It's 2 weeks shorter if you don't get out of your pool. So you could potentially, like, one team, for argument's sake, could be potentially looking at, in the last few years, have lost out on 4 to 5 games per season. That obviously adds up when you're trying to give opportunities to younger players. Squad sizes have got smaller as well, obviously, then as a result, as we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's great to hear him reference that, and it probably, it probably was something that supporters didn't really see as being an issue. I think everyone assumes there's enough games for the talent to emerge. But as he's pointed out, when you start to squeeze that calendar, and you know that for actually the URC, because it's got stronger, has made it even harder for coaches to experiment as well. So it's not just less games. It's actually, can you afford to take a chance and risk losing a game and potentially then missing out on a home draw, etc. So it is fascinating. I just think I look, we've step walked into this. No one really cared when you talk about it. There's no obvious example of anything being done. I mean, like England, with all the resource they have in terms of playing numbers. Conor O'Shea has implemented a front five program where specialist coaches go around to the top clubs and do individual and unit work with high potential young front five players, and whether it's down to that or whether it's just down to genetics or whatever, but you're starting to see some young props. Now, it's not perfect, and like if you just to be aware of this, England now have a central contracting type system where he's got 25 central contracts to give out. I think it's about 125 grand a year. But he didn't name any tight head props. They have an issue with tight head prop in terms of succession, but there is some really promising 20, 21-year-olds in their system that they know that they need to develop quickly. So they also had that period where obviously nothing came true of significance. But they have a plan now to try and rectify that. And we effectively missed 6, 7 years, really. If you go back from, you've got Clarkson, Jack Boyle in this squad. And then, you have your Beelums, you have your Porters, your Furlongs, your Healy's, your Munster contingents, your James Cronin, your John Ryans, your Stephen Archers, even your Buckleys, etc., are all. There's a 7 or 8 year gap where he produced no one really, of international standard. And Dennis Buckley could have, I'm not saying he's an international standard, but someone to go in and actually change the team, the team's dynamic, or to be a regular match day 23. So that's worrying and scary. And I had to be honest with you, Neil, I don't see anything having been done since to actually change that. So I mean, what is the plan to develop new front rows, more front rows? Is it just cross your fingers and hope? Over the last couple of years, there's a very exciting tie-up prop has come out of Black Rock. A very exciting tie-up prop has come out of St. Mary's over the last 3 years, who have the size, frame, and athleticism to potentially make it. But again, what are we going to do with them? What are we going to do with them? Are they going to be behind? Well, they're both in Leinster, so they're going to be behind Furlong, Slimani, Clarkson, and all the way down, and hence we don't see them clear 25. I mean, I actually am in favour of the ban on foreign players, and that might sound stupid, foreign props. I actually think maybe let them each province bring in a foreign prop, but that the Irish props whose place they take is sent on loan to Pro D2 for a year or a period or the Gaelic Premiership or whatever, or even Wales, where Ed Byrne has gone to Cardiff to start every week for them. I mean, if they were playing for a Welsh region against Irish provinces or against the South African provinces franchises, that would be great for their development. And you look at it, I mean, Scotland have the same issue. I mean, Scotland brought on props at the weekend. Who weren't at the level of South Africa, and that's obviously the world's best, and the game went away from them quite quickly. But over the last 3 or 4 years, and still they're very reliant on Schumann, who obviously was a project player. Before that, it was WP Nell. So they went out, and you could say it's not the way to do it, but they identified an area and they found two non-Scottish born props who could do a job for them at test level. And you look at in Ireland, I mean, probably the two project players that jump to mind, you know, Roman Salanoa and Keelan Knox. It just hasn't happened, you know. So Roman obviously has been injured a lot, and that's unfortunate. We know he's got a lot of ability and power. Keelan Knox, I read an article about him a few weeks ago. He's playing in Federal One now, you know.
Yeah.
We just haven't got that right either. There was a Tongan prop with an Irish passport that Nusa Fora signed that did a season in Old Wesley. Unfortunately, it didn't really happen for him. So it's not, you know, we have tried to do a few little things, but we haven't got it right as well, you know. And hence, we're now in a situation where massive, massive pressure on Thomas Clarkson if he has to come on after 5-10 minutes, or even if he has to come on for the last 30. He's a guy that moves well, you know, has lots of potential, but unfortunately, just hasn't had the minutes that most type five players need to be able to compete at that level. But again, it's the positive side of this is he's going to get exposed. He's going to get exposed. But I think he's getting exposed because of lack of depth rather than having earned it in a meaningful way, if you get me.
I do, yeah. And like, obviously, this even goes beyond the tight five players. Like, we obviously have been talking a lot about that in the last few weeks. But if you look at this, like this moment in time now, it really is actually like crunch time to actually figure out a plan of how to get more minutes into these players. Because if you look at what the Ireland under-20s have produced in the last few years, there's a golden generation of under 20, you know, players in their early 20s coming through that you desperately don't want to see slipping through the cracks or losing out on a potentially excellent career just because they couldn't really get minutes under their belt or played very limited rugby by the time they were 23, 24 years of age. So like a couple of things you mentioned there, for example, like, you know, operating some sort of a loan system where they obviously do it very well in Premiership rugby, where so many younger players are going off playing in the Championship and playing every single week. Like, is the AIL being utilised as much as it could be? I get the feeling it is being utilised more lately than it had been in previous years, but is it still being utilised fully? Obviously, younger players are reluctant to leave the country because that obviously means they can't play for Ireland until they're back. But is there a way of saying, if you're under a certain age and you kind of get green ticked to go abroad and play your rugby over there and gain experience, that you are still eligible to be available if you're, you know, if you're under a certain age or something like that? What are the solutions to getting this? I mean, I know they're thrown in.
Yeah.
I know there's an Interpro competition being run, you know, scattered over the Six Nations window and this international window, but like, does that go far enough?
Yeah, look, the Interpros is better than nothing, and it keep players match fit. Obviously, it does expose those non-internationals to a competitive-ish match, even though, you know, I've been to see a lot of them and they're glorified, you know, practice matches. That's just the reality of it. There's nothing massive at stake. It's not the same. And the AAL, there's some cracking games in the AAL, but I actually think it's more the holistic side of it. It's not just the actual quality of the game that you play, because I think the AIL is a good level. It's just leaving your home environment, you know what I mean, and actually going into a different environment and
being out of the Irish rugby.
Yeah,
bubble.
for a while. And if you look at the team, I mean, you know, Mac Hansen, James Lowe, Bundy Akie, Gibson Park, all came from outside that environment, you know. The likes of Gerry Flannery and Owen Redden and Johnny O'Connor and these guys, Ty Byrne, all left their home to Felix Jones, all left their home provinces for a while to try and, I suppose, prove themselves and gain experience. We don't have as many examples of players going abroad, but I think that's, as you said, the young players are afraid to leave Ireland. And I'm not saying they should be cut loose. I'm actually saying the IRFU could actually facilitate that. You know, they could facilitate that. It would be, it wouldn't be set them to the wolves. It would actually be, look, there's an opportunity to go down to Dax there for for 3 months. They need a medical joker, and we see that as part of your development, you know. I'm telling you that Pro D2 now is a proper league. I mean,
you look at the players that have gone over, play like high profile players, Courtney Laws, George North in the last couple of years. Like,
sure,
there are top quality players heading over there.
Yeah, there are, and as I said, that's probably the next step for us, because with the game time, and again, you're talking maybe like I'd love to see Farrell identify 10 or 12 players that they feel does need an individual development plan and program, and try and make that work. You're never going to get the perfect solution. There's always going to be barriers to it, but you know, and the RFU to support on that, I think, will be a big positive. I think the challenge is, unfortunately, a lot of the quality is backed up in one province. So it's probably more Leinster focused that they will lose some players, but I don't believe it's necessarily losing them. It's a loan arrangement where they'll always be able to get them back, and hopefully they'll come back better equipped. And then we just need to find a way. Like, Irish rugby's in a really good place, but there unfortunately is obvious cracks there. And being at the top of the pile, or being a top four country, well, even with a great coach like Farrell, there's no guarantee that it'll last. You know, most teams tend to be cyclical. So what are we doing that's different to what's happened in the past to actually try and find those high quality players who can turn the dial international level? And even though we've had amazing under-20s teams, you're really only talking two or three per team who have that potential. And Sam is one of them. Sam has come through. Jack Crowley's the same. Jack Crowley was an outstanding under-20 and he has stepped up. And Munster backed him and made the decision that they were going to push him rather than Joey or Ben. And he has grabbed that opportunity. And now the challenge for him is to be that player at international level, you know, year on year on year. I think if you look at his body of work, he's had a very, very good period in the Irish jersey. And yet at the moment, there's question marks around him, because that's what happens with a test level, unfortunately, for the vast majority of players. Where they get to that period in the second year where they just have to become better because everyone knows more about them. And I'm looking forward to seeing him rise to that challenge. I'm looking forward to see Sam get an opportunity to learn at the highest level. I'm looking forward to seeing Frawley bounce back from a blip last weekend.
That was a good conversation, but wrapping it back around to the starting team for this weekend, it was just when you mentioned Jack Crowley, it got me thinking about Robbie Henshaw coming in, replacing Bundiaki. This could well have been a change that was planned out 10 days ago, where Andy Farrell had things in mind where he might want to swap players around for various games. It could well be that even as well. But what do you think? How do you think Ireland look now with Henshaw in there at 12 rather than Aki? Does it change, do you think, Jack Crowley's approach to the game? Like, for example, what I would have heard a couple of people last weekend say about Crowley was that, and when Frawley came on as well, it's that sometimes when you have Bundiaki outside you, he can be a little bit of a crutch, because it's never a bad option to just give the ball out to Bundiaki and let him make some hard yards. Does having Robbie Henshaw in there force them to maybe think a little bit more, to open things up a little bit more?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the 1-1 is really unusual, because over the last 2 years, I've often felt he's gone into the Irish camp in average enough form for Connacht and then being unbelievably good for Ireland.
Yeah.
You're like, you're going to go, well, look, we can just trust him to play well. This time, he went in quite good form. I thought he's been really energetic, really into Connacht, playing well, and then he had an average or quiet game. Now, I would say, and I don't know whether this was pre-planned or whatever, but Ireland tried to use him as a playmaker rather than as a battering ram last weekend. And that doesn't... He can obviously do both, but I just felt when you look at that Irish team that was going out there, it's actually a small team, a small backline in particular compared to, you know, the big teams, and you just need Bundy to do what he does best, which is give you a go forward. And we kind of got caught in two minds. So I wouldn't write Bundy a key off. Obviously, this whole the chat about Toulon now probably becomes more relevant potentially if he doesn't get his place back. You know, is he worth his central contract then at whatever turn of 35? But I think the reality is he had a quiet game, and I would argue that we tried to use him in the wrong way. But and this could have been a change that Farrell had already decided upon. I think, I mean, Bundy Aki probably would be, well, himself and Tupilotu would be the first choice 12s for a Lions tour, as long as he holds his form. So he still has a huge amount to offer in the Irish jersey. For Crowley, yeah, Robbie's got to come in and hit the ground running, because even though, you know, Bundy didn't have a massive game last weekend, I still think he actually creates space for others if you use him the right way, or get you go forward. So that's the challenge. But obviously, Robbie and Gary together, both very a very settled partnership, and always produce for Ireland. So I don't. There's not a massive drop off. It's just interesting for me that Bundy was actually in great form going into it, and then loses his place. And as I said, I would suspect it's more around just trying to give Robbie an opportunity as well this November.
Yeah, and I think as well, because Henshaw's probably missed out in a lot of games for Ireland in the last year or so, even going back to the World Cup, just with small, badly timed injuries. The other name as well that we haven't even covered, and to be honest, I don't even want to do too much of him today, because I think his big week is going to be next week when he hits number 1-3-4, but Cian Healy, obviously. We kind of covered it with Mick and Johnny a couple of days ago as well, going to be levelling Brian O'Driscoll's record of 133 Ireland caps this weekend. Nicely timed as well. It'll be 15 years to the day since his Ireland debut against Australia at Croke Park. So just nice the way all those things come around. But I mean, we spoke about him in length as well a few weeks ago when he broke his record for Devon Toner's record for Leinster as well. I mean, just phenomenal longevity in that career.
Yeah, it's incredible. And like we're giving out about the lack of depth, but we are so fortunate to have had him there as a safety blanket. You know, he'll be down on the team sheet as tight head, hooker and loose head at the weekend, which is remarkable. And given the injuries he's had, I think he gives everybody a lot of confidence. He always knows his role. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't have the same power he had back in the day, but if he's needed, he will do a very good job. And he'll get another cap, and it's a special week for him and his family.
Yeah, and I suspect next week could even be a start for the day that'll probably be in it. On Argentina then, beaten the Springboks, they've beaten New Zealand, they've beaten Australia, and they've beaten France all in this calendar year. They've also lost to each of them as well. The one thing I've noticed watching Argentina this season is that on their day, they are capable of beating anybody in the world, and they are absolutely world class. But you have to catch them on that day. Other days, they, you know, they are so hot and cold, depending on what the day is. For those that haven't really been watching them, what sort of rugby do they play now? Because I think the old cliche would have been a forward dominated game. Big scrum is what people always would have associated with. It feels like they've moved to a completely different style of play now.
Yeah, they actually, and it's causing a lot of consternation in Argentina. They actually have a bang average scrum, and have had a
had for a few years now.
It's really, really bad. And Gallo is a very good ball carrier. Montoya is a very good set piece hooker. Sclavi, he's not an amazing tight head, but it's just the whole focus has gone away, and has, as you said, for 3 or 4 years on actually that forward dominated game where set pieces is massive. Their line of maul isn't great, but their attack is spectacular. It's probably one of the most pleasing on the eye attacks. And Felipe Condoponi went, and obviously he has a big say in attack, but he went and got a guy called Kendrick Lynn, who used to work in Lyon, really good guy. And together they're creating some set piece launch, which is very detailed, very efficient in how it runs, and then phase attack and philosophy around when to kick, which is very smart. And Felipe's actually, you know, Felipe the player was a maverick, was a genius. But I know in Leinster they couldn't believe the Felipe that came back. He was, you know, very serious, very process driven. not much emotion in his coaching at all, which is obviously not how he was as a player. But I think what he's done is he's served his time under some really good head coaches and Stuart and Leo and then he went back to work in Argentina. He worked with Cheka, and now he's taken it on himself and put together a very good staff. And you know, Kendrick Lynn is the attack coach, and I said I rate him really highly. He's an Irish guy working on the kicking side of the game. Alan Kingsley from Portlaoise, and you know, Alan was doing some consultancy with Biarritz when they got promoted to top 14. Had a couple of Argentinian players there who enjoyed working with him. They spoke to Cheka, and Cheka made him part of his staff leading
worked
into the
he
World Cup.
He worked with you with the Dragons.
Yeah, I signed him for the Dragons. He came to Dragons as a skills coach, but mainly focused on kicking. But in fairness to him, he specialised then in kicking, and effectively that's nearly all he does. So he works with base kickers, kicking individuals, kicking out of hand, but also works with coaches on delivering a kick strategy. And Felipe kept him on. So because the way Argentinian rugby has gone with the Jaguares folding, they're kind of gone back to where they were in the 2007 World Cup and after that, where they were just scattered over Europe. And do you mind if you remember 2007 World Cup? I certainly do. Where we flopped, but
there a lot of our listeners will remind you, Bernard, there was no World Cup in 2007. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Well, I unfortunately remember they got to the final, if memory serves me right, or certain, but like sing songs on the bus, go to train, and they had this real, I don't know, kind of amateur spirit where they were like a touring side again. And I think, and look, there's lots of data and stats that tell you cohesion is one of the biggest performance drivers. And that's why Leinster are very strong. And that's why the Crusaders that's why Leinster and Ireland are strong, and that's why the Crusaders and New Zealand are strong, is because traditionally they had a lot of the same people. And Argentina, technically or theoretically, had great cohesion when everyone was back playing for the Jaguares, and then they played for Argentina. But it actually it led to a massive drop-off in their performances at international level. And they were very poor for a while. They're not very poor now. And I think the Irish public... I don't know if we are taking them as seriously as maybe we should, or maybe we're just expecting a backlash from Ireland and we'll deal with them. But if we don't really, really find a top quality performance and they pitch, and as you said, there has been some inconsistency there, but I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, you know, pitch tomorrow night in Dublin. Very, very good performance last weekend. And I think they're certainly really enjoying being back in this jersey again, and they have the quality. I mean, they're obviously being able to bring back in Matera at six. He was suspended last week. Like, he's a monster. They have Martin Gonzalez at seven. He's moved from six. He's a freak. Like, he's a special player. And then their backline, Malia, we know from the European Cup. Easgrove, the sevens winger, is lethal. And sorry, Alan Kingsley's job is to make sure that they have a good kick strategy. And, you know, we've been talking about this escorting for the last couple of weeks, and it's actually changed the game. Like if you look back to how Australia won the ball the other night, or they won the game the other night against England, it's a short kickoff that Suwali goes up and forces Itoje, who has a single lift, to knock on. Now, again, it's not a box kick, but in the past, there'll be some kind of little block there. Yeah. He wouldn't get that run to get up in the air. And Itoje knocks it on, and they eventually score in the corner. And teams are now, it's more advantageous or attractive to kick short off kickoff. So you're getting that contest. The Garrett Anscombe got smashed as he came down from a contestable. The ball was knocked forward, and Fiji scored effectively the match-winning try from that. And that's the... These are the things that maybe we hadn't thought about. So now I know, talking to some coaches this week, for example, with Ireland, right? Do you want to have Gibson Park in the backfield catching those high kicks? He's been well able to catch them with a really good escort or glove. Is he now going to be good in the air if the kick is contestable? I would say no. Likewise, your 10. Like, Ireland often ended up with the 10 and 9 back for certain periods. And even if the 10 catches in the air, Do you want him getting smashed by Matera and counter-rooked? You know, the physical impact of that. So I know the coaches now, for the first 2 weeks, they're going, okay, how do we try and protect our kicker without giving away penalties? How do we resource that rook? How do we make sure we have people in the right positions for the tap-backs, etc.? But now they're saying, shit, who do we actually keep in the backfield? And if we are going to change our policy, how do we get into that system? And also the quality of your kick. So like, we obviously tried to target McKenzie in the backfield. But at least two occasions, the kick was just 3 or 4 meters too long. And he was able to step that first chaser. And then a change is completely the counterattack. So you got to be so accurate. So I'm fascinated to see how Ireland, like, I think if I'm Argentina, I'm saying, okay, if Gibson Park's in the backfield, we got to challenge him there. And that's a worry for Ireland. And it's nothing against him. It's just natural. Likewise, you know, do we want Jack Crowley or Sam Prendergast getting the physical onslaught that they will get from being in that backfield when they're very isolated? And then are they going to be out of the game for the next phase? So if you kick to that nine and you get them on the ground, well, then they have to play a phase or two to be able to box kick back, and that gives you a chance of momentum. So there's lots of different wrinkles on this, that because it's such a new trial, we're only really seeing week by week, which is quite fascinating. But it has opened the game up, Neil.
I know it's a small sample size, but have you liked what you've seen of it?
Yeah, I have. Now, I think the problem is, I think it was brought in to increase the contest in the air, and was brought in to try and kill the box kick.
Yeah.
I like the fact the referees have been so hard on the nines now.
Yeah.
About time. So that's making it harder. They don't have a block either. So I don't think teams are. I actually think teams have been less keen on box kicking, but more keen to kick off 10.
Yeah.
And quite early in the phases. So that's probably something that maybe I'm not massively fan of. I like the aerial contest, but like, for example, Fiji, who are Fiji, and they want to play, and they had them. Like, if you saw the end game, like, they get a turnover and all they have to do is kick it out, and they try and score.
What in the name of God were they doing?
But that's what makes Fiji special. But
I was screaming at the TV.
No, it was crazy. But for 78 minutes, they actually played like a team who had control. And Munz, you know, as soon as he felt they weren't getting momentum, he went to the air. And obviously, they've got gifted athletes. And then when they got it back, Wales were chaotic, and it creates opportunity. So my good feeling is it is going to have the desired effect. We actually haven't seen any nasty area collisions where players have kind of come down on top of their head, which is great, which was a fear I had. And I think it has, but it gives teams who are really smart an advantage. And Joe Schmidt is someone who's really smart, and in my mind, I'm thinking forward 2 weeks, not disrespecting Argentina, but I'm thinking someone like him, particularly, who has these athletes who are amazing in the air, who have maybe experience of Aussie rules or AFL, with someone like him there, they could suddenly get way better quickly by exploiting the rules or the rule change faster than everybody else with the cattle they have.
Yeah, and it's what I'm really looking forward to seeing over the next few months or up to 12 months is how teams are adapting to it. And is it going to change selection policies where, you know, more traditional fullbacks might start playing on the wing a bit more if someone deems them to have better aerial ability when those kicks are coming back, if players can no longer, you know, run those escort lines, who's going to be the smart coach to figure out, well, where will I put these players? Will I get, you know, these players to drop in on the near side or on the far side or on the open side? Like, you can already think of a handful of well-known coaches out there who are probably poring over footage and footage and footage and mountains of match footage over the next few months, just trying to pick apart any advantage they can and see what way the ball is going to break and see what way they can manipulate this new law change to work out in their own team's favour. I think it's very interesting.
I think certainly what I'm thinking may happen, and there's obviously a risk, is that you drop to a 12-3 in certain areas of the field. So instead of having two in the backfield and 30 in the front line. You've got three in the backfield, and maybe even treat it, and this is very extreme, whenever, like we've seen with goal line dropouts where you actually have a power play. For example, for just use Ireland as an example. So if you look at the goal line dropout power plays we've played, it didn't really matter where it got kicked, but Doris was going to be the first carry.
Yeah.
You know, so if you basically dropped your eight back in certain areas of the field, or as soon as they shaped to kick, or you picked up the call for that kick, and he got back for Ireland, and there's lots of ifs here, but if the kick was slightly too long, and the winger or the nine was able to throw a pass to him, you effectively could have a pre-planned three-phase attack off that, if you get me, you know. And I think that's something, and will that then open up the dummy kick option to run and go and exploit space? So I would like to hope that this is a small little thing, a small little trial that does open up more creativity and, suppose, structured and unstructured attack.
Might wrap it up in the next couple of minutes, but last point to bring it back to Ireland and what we want to see from them this weekend and over the next few weeks as well. The big one, obviously, we've spoken a lot about the line-out itself over probably more than a year now at this stage, and the failings around it. Right now, I'm less focused on what is causing the issues of, you know, is it a bad throw, is it a bad lift, whatever, but the knock-on effect of what it's doing to Ireland's attack. And, you know, for example, we would have seen the other day that New Zealand would have given them the ball at the front, and obviously they're ready for it, and that stills your chances. I was looking back through it, matches over the last year or so earlier in the week, and we, you know, Ireland would have always scored a lot of maul tries. You look at Dan Sheehan's record, for example, and Ronan Keller. Ireland's last five games in a row, they haven't scored a maul try. The last 12 tries have all been away from a maul. You look back before that, though, in the games before this. So in the Wales match in the Six Nations, there was a maul try in there. Against Italy, there was a maul try in there. Two maul tries against France. There was a maul try against New Zealand. You know, they have completely dried up, and that avenue has dried up. And we saw Ireland going for it on a couple of occasions against New Zealand last Friday night. But because they were just having to take the ball at the front, they weren't budging them.
No. And also, I think New Zealand had a very clear, smart tactical plan to stop it. And it's effectively the way the Crusaders defend mauls, where they call it spears and nets, and they just try and break the connections through the hips, and then the guys on the outside just pin it down. And it's a passive type defensive system, but if everyone does their job properly, it's very hard to get go forward. And then it's shit ball to play off. It's poor ball to play off. So, you know, we've been told that Ireland, I look, there's no doubt Ireland will have seen the fact that they haven't been as good as they had in the past at converting those 5 meter maul opportunities into tries. I think they did a lot of it in Portugal, or they certainly have put a focus on it. And sometimes it takes a few weeks to really get it right. You need to get a bit of confidence. Argentina's maul defense isn't as good as New Zealand, but it's certainly something that we need to get back into our game, because if you don't put fear into the opposition that you can actually maul them, the next phase is even harder again, because obviously they have players who haven't been attracted to that defensive maul, who are there to slow down the next breakdown or make an impact tackle. So I think it's a big focus for Ireland. Paul will be very frustrated that we didn't see a big improvement, I think, against the All Blacks, and it's just something that has to be improved upon, you know. And personnel haven't changed much this weekend. None in the starting 15, so you would expect this Ireland to be at another level ahead, and that lineout has to be more productive, because, as you've said, so many of our points come from there. The lineout's going to be interesting. I'm more interested in our phase attack, because that was our super strength. That was an Andy Farrell team. We all spoke about that. I think the players got confidence from that. And because of our inaccuracy and indiscipline and set piece that crumbled a little bit, we didn't really get a chance to see that at all, really, in the whole game against the All Blacks. So I think the line breaks was 9-1, so in favor of the All Blacks. So I want to see that. I want to see that. And look, to get that, you need obviously good catch pass. You need accuracy of clean. But we didn't even see really the shapes that you would expect from Ireland. So, and that intensity and the physicality and accuracy will have frustrated Farrell. But I also think you'd be frustrated that we didn't look like an Andy Farrell team, in terms of how we were set up attack wise. So, and we're never going to be a powerful side. Or sorry, this generation is never going to be a team who beat teams with power. So we have to be that really well organized, disciplined side. So that's for me the lineup's going to be interesting, but it's actually, you know, do we look like an Irish team? And if we do, great. But if we don't, well, why aren't we?
Final point then, are you confident they will look more like the Ireland team we know?
Yeah, I think you have to trust them to get back, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to win. I mean, honestly, I think that defeat will puts question marks around the team at the moment, and they are a very resilient team. They show a lot of character. They will bounce back up, but I think we have to be probably 8 or 9 out of 10 of our best to win, and that's a big challenge, a big challenge. So I'm not confident. I think we'll win, but I'm not confident.
Right. We'll finish on that note then. 8:10 kickoff on Friday night at the Aviva Stadium. Live commentary on RTE Radio 1 as well. Bernard, it's been a pleasure having you on as always. We'll be back for another podcast earlier on next week, maybe Monday or Tuesday. We're still ironing out the details of that. But until then, enjoy the game and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Neil.